Welcome to NACSW's Podcast of the Month. Our podcast program makes available recordings of a wide variety of NACSW presentations and discussions on topics of particular interest to Christians in social work. Our Podcast of the Month program features a new podcast every 30 days for your listening pleasure. We hope you enjoy today's podcast.
I'm Dr. Landy Endicott.
Hey, greetings, everybody. New experiment for all of us. A little bit of stress here, but we're okay. I'm Lanny Endicott. I've been at ORU now for, Oral Roberts University, that is, for about 38 years. And I do some consulting for child welfare with the state and with one of the Indian tribes here as well. And I've been doing that for some time as well. And in addition to doing some of my work here with child welfare, with DHS, I've done some debriefing when there's a crisis in a county office, and I've been doing that for about 12 years. And so I've had a lot of experience in working with people who are really stressed on the job, compassion fatigue, even going toward burnout. In fact, they've even encountered some folks that are just absolutely burned out, but they can't really change jobs because it's a small county and it's a good paying job. So you run into some real conflicts there when you work in this area. So as a response to that, I've been doing some training or developed this training package, and I've had different phases of it over time. And you can find this on my website, drlannyendicott.com/tripod.com. And this whole presentation is there. You can use it however you want. It's free. I don't charge anything for anything I do. So it's my passion to help our profession stay professional and help our profession stay healthy. That's one of my whole goals in this whole thing. So anyway, let's go for it. Go to the next slide. Are you there, Rick?
Got it. I advance to the next slide. Breathe in, breathe out.
Yes. Actually, we went past suggestions for training. And let's go on to breathe in, breathe out. This is kind of a thing I developed with some help of a professor here that's really into some of the mystical kind of things. The idea of the breath of life, breathing in, breathing out, that breath is very important to all of us, that breathing helps us to relax ourselves, as we all know as professionals, basically. And then I say, breathe in, just take a deep breath, breathe out, and then if you go to the fourth slide, you've got, before you breathe in again, you say relaxation. Then you breathe in, slow, deep belly breath, release it, breathe out, peace. The next one would be healing. And you can even, I'll get to this a little bit later. But if you go to the fifth slide, are you there?
Got it. Starts with moving over the water surface.
Yeah. I put this in here because, in talking to some of my mystical friends, both Hebrew and Greek words for the spirit refer to the breath of God. I see breathing as necessary to life and calmness, but also as a metaphor of breathing in the spirit and the resources brought to us by the spirit of God. That is the fruit of the spirit, healing, relaxation. Finally, I see this form of breathing as a form of prayer, breath prayer. Literally, breathing in God, breathing in the Spirit, remembering His presence within, calling upon His help for our needs. And in the triangle, you breathe in. You can even say, Spirit, breathe, and say what your need is. Or you can utter each breath, one of the fruits of the Spirit. Whatever suits you. You can do this. I have found it very helpful to me. I've done this now for several years. And then on the next slide, if you look at, I'm not going to go over all these verses for you, but there's a lot in the scriptures about the Spirit of God and the Spirit of God as a part of us. And the metaphor, that breathing connected with thinking about incorporating the Spirit helps us to develop ourselves spiritually as well. And if you go to slide number 7, you've got fill in the blank, breath of life. Now, in a secular audience, I do this in secular audiences too, I'll say breath of life. But for us who are believers, we'll say Spirit of God or Spirit. Breath of life, breathe. And then if you go to the next slide, which is number 8, you'll see Spirit as you inhale, breathe as you exhale, love, Spirit, breathe, take your time, love, joy, peace, the fruits of the Spirit, as I said before. I hope this is meaningful to you. It's very meaningful to me. And I've been doing it for some time now. I've done a lot of reading on this and kind of developed this form along with the picture you see of the water coming down the mountainside going over the rocks. I hope that's meaningful to you. And you can actually combine deep breathing with imagery. And you can go to that very scene, or you can go to the sea. You can go to the mountains. You can go wherever you want. You can go to grandma's backyard. Everybody has a place or places where they can go in their imagination and relax and breathe and incorporate the Spirit, even the Spirit of Thanksgiving within. Okay, go to the next slide, number 9. Before I go to number 9, Rick, you want to open it up just for a moment, see if anybody has any questions about that?
For those of us that have the PowerPoint printed out, I don't know about others, but I'm a little bit lost. Maybe it was edited since I printed this, but I printed this, couple of days ago, but we're missing, I think, some of the imagery pictures. And as you move on, the next slide we have is professional self-care, social work. Is that going to be next?
That's right. That's correct. That's correct.
All right. So we're just missing a couple, I think.
Okay. Luann, if you want to shoot me an email at rich@w.org, I'll send you the updated PowerPoint slide I'm working from.
Oh, that'd be great. I'm not at the computer now, but that would be great.
Okay. Yeah, I think you did download an earlier copy. Let me update you.
All right.
Yeah. You know, I'm always changing and modifying, and sorry for that.
Hi. This is Dolores Hill from California. I'm sorry I'm late. I didn't have my passcode, and I don't have my computer at work, so I had to call home and ask my husband to get it for me. So
great. Thanks for joining.
I'm sorry.
Okay, Rick.
A 9.
Rick, why don't we go on then?
Okay, Lanny, callers are muted. It's all yours.
Okay, we're down to professional self-care and social work. This statement appears in Social Work Speaks. I worked on it somewhat in the last delegate assembly that we had for social work for NASW. And just simply says that professional self-care is an essential underpinning to best practice in the profession of social work. The need for professional self-care has relevance to all social workers in the settings where they practice. The practice of self-care, the next slide. Slide number 10. The practice of self-care is critical to the survival of and growth of the social work profession. health, and there's several other things in there, but then I said health and productivity of the social worker. Then we get into slide number 11. And this is a code of ethics that we follow, 4.05, called impairment. Point A, social workers should not allow their own personal problems, psychosocial distress, and it goes on with some others, to interfere with their professional judgment and performance or jeopardize the best interest of people for whom they have a professional responsibility. Go to the next slide, if you would. And then B, or actually, if I go back to this, actually go back to A, if you would, which would be slide 10. Can you do that? And the point I make here is a lack of self-care can lead to impairment of the social work professional. Can our impairment be damaging to our clients? How? Note that the purpose of social work licensing is to protect the public from the social worker. That's why we follow the code of ethics. Our impairment can put our clients in jeopardy. How can the social worker's personal problems be injurious to his or her clients? And one of those would be just being angry with your clients, as we'll get into. Not being attentive to your client, being attentive to your own struggles. Not being fully present with your client can be damaging to the client. Is that true? I'll let y'all answer that one. Go to the next one, if you will. Slide number 12. And then this one that says, social workers whose personal problems, psychosocial distress, etc., should take remedial action by seeking professional help, making adjustments in workload, even terminating practice or taking any other steps necessary to protect clients and others. In other words, the extreme measure for us as professionals is to probably terminate our work with our clients because we could be injurious to them if we're sizzling toward burnout. Something to think about. And the next slide, number 13, hurting people can be hurtful to others. Okay, let's go to the next one, which would be slide 14. And a lot of these next few slides I get from Beth Stamm, S-T-A-M-M, from Idaho State University. She's one of the leaders, I believe, in putting together this whole focus on compassion fatigue, compassion satisfaction, and burnout. She, along with Figley and others, are really good at this. And she has a website, and this slide here comes right off her website, along with the questionnaires that you can use, assessment questionnaires that you can use to help yourself and or your staff that you work with. I like the way she talks about it. She talks about compassion satisfaction. There's kind of a continuum here between compassion satisfaction and compassion fatigue. And in this slide, on number 14, she talks about the positive aspects of helping. That is pleasure and satisfaction from working in helping caregiving systems. Maybe related to the fact that you're helping, you're providing care. The system itself, you like the system you work in, the agency, the people you work with, the colleagues, and then it helps reinforce beliefs about yourself that you can do this kind of work. And altruism, just the fact that you can be helpful. And I also added for us, it's a sense of calling. For those of us who are believers, who are social workers, we experience a sense of calling in working with the people that we do. And if you go to the next one, compassion fatigue, which will be slide number 15. On the other side of the continuum here, you've got the negative aspects of helping. Negative aspects of working in helping systems may be related to providing care, the kind of clients you work with, and the kind of care you're having to provide, and the stress and the trauma that your clients are facing. The system itself, and this is one area I'll get to a little bit later, my focus of research now and in the future is looking at how the system, our workplace system, traumatizes us and how what we can do to try to help mediate that problem. Anyway, also work with colleagues. We can have problems there. And then beliefs about myself, my dreams, my values. Is there a match between my training and the kind of work I'm doing? And then she gets into burnout. Spiritually, burnout for us as Christians would be a loss of self, a loss of our values, a loss of who we are as persons by the very profession that we're in. And then we have work-related trauma, the trauma of working with traumatized people. Anyway, you can go to the next slide. And then she talks about burnout and secondary traumatic stress. Burnout, work-related hopelessness, and feelings of ineffectiveness. Secondary traumatic stress, work-related secondary exposure to extremely or traumatically stressful events. Both have negative effects. Burnout, you're simply worn out. Secondary traumatic stress can be related to fear, retreat, avoidance, anxiety, sometimes of the very clients we work with. Go to the next slide, which should be 17. Psychological trauma, she gives a definition. Damage to the psyche from a traumatic event can lead to PTSD, physical changes in the brain and the brain chemistry, changes in the person's response to future stress. Okay, here's a model that she provides, and then I'll give you one of my models a little bit later. Stan sees professional quality of life. On the one hand, you've got compassion satisfaction. I really like what I'm doing. I feel like I'm making an impact. I feel like I'm where I need to be with God's will in my life, etc., in the kind of work I'm doing. Compassion fatigue, on the other hand, has aspects of burnout and secondary trauma. Secondary trauma meaning I'm working with somebody who has primary trauma, the client, and because of my experience with the client, I absorb some of the trauma into the client and experience secondary trauma. These two things can contribute to compassion fatigue in the way she understands it. The next slide kind of gives a lot of little circles. Number 19. Notice on the left the term professional quality of life, and you have three circles connected there. You got the work environment, the client environment, and the personal environment, your personal life, your family life, your friends and colleagues, and so forth. All of these can contribute to you being satisfied. And note that PROQOLCS, this is a test at the very end. It's also on my website. It's on her website. It's free to use for yourself. It's not clinical. It's just educational to help give you some insight into yourself in terms of compassion satisfaction, compassion fatigue, and burnout. These three items in a 30-question questionnaire, very simple, are measured. Then if you notice also, the client environment, the work environment, and the personal environment can contribute to compassion fatigue. And note also that compassion fatigue has forms of exhaustion and frustration and anger. And you can be then depressed by the work environment that you're in. It can even lead you to a sense of burnout. Notice the red down below. Personal environment, traumatized by work. It could be that in your past, in my past, we could have traumatic experiences that we're trying to work through being in the profession we're in. And we get into working with traumatized clients, we can be traumatized again and again by the clientele that we work with. And so she talks about primary exposure. That means we could be traumatized at the workplace itself by our clients, or actually secondary exposure would be by our clients. And primary exposure could be we could be assaulted or offended in some way at the workplace. So this is kind of a crazy group of circles, but I think it gives a good idea of the relationship between the work environment, the client environment, personal environment, compassion satisfaction, compassion fatigue. Go to the next slide. This is a model that I have, a model for burnout. I see burnout myself as the worst of all. First, there is the primary trauma the client experiences, the secondary trauma that I experience because of what I've been listening to with the client. Secondary trauma or compassion fatigue, as I would say it. Some of these terms are used kind of interchangeably. The stress of life. My life, my personal life, my family life is very stressful. Economic issues, health issues, all of that, the stress of life, sits there and cooks with my secondary trauma and my working with clients who've been traumatized. And that can contribute to me experiencing burnout. I liken burnout to like your hamburger on the grill. And as long as it's got a little bit of juice, it's pretty tasty. But when it cooks further and further, and it takes a while to burn it out, once it gets to the burnout stage, it gets charred, and there's not a whole lot of value left in your being able to perform your work on your job, even in yourself personally. You can go to the next slide. And here is burnout defined. This will be slide number 21. A syndrome of emotional exhaustion, depersonalization, you kind of lose yourself, and reduced personal accomplishment that can occur among individuals who do people work of some kind. And I think it's that loss of self that's very important. We change when we move toward burnout. Exhaustion. A state of physical, emotional, mental exhaustion caused by long-term involvement in emotionally demanding situations. And most of us who've been in this field for a long time, we have dealt with over the years lots of emotionally challenging issues with our clients and with ourselves personally. If you go to the next one, maybe I'm going too fast here. Did you go back to exhaustion, Rick? That would be 22. That would be exhaustion. Then 23 is disillusionment. I think this is kind of a key one too. A state of fatigue, this is slide 23, or frustration or disillusionment brought about by devotion to a cause, way of life, or relationship that failed to produce the expected reward. In other words, we invest a lot of time, a lot of energy in the work that we do, and disillusionment can come about when we're not getting to what we want or expected, you know, from our involvement. These are all aspects of that. And then if we go to slide 24, some symptoms here. Fatigue, illness, sleep problems, disillusionment with work, cynicism. That's kind of a key one. We begin to change. Our whole demeanor begins to change when we become quite cynical. And you probably encountered cynicism within your workplace or your office, toward the agency or clientele. Can you imagine being cynical toward your clientele? A sense of helplessness and hopelessness, feeling powerless to change events, anger even toward the system, the agency, who you work with, and towards your clients. Your very clients. That's part of that impairment, I think, that I'm talking about earlier. The idea that anger toward the clients can be a real problem for us. And then we get into depression and isolation, detachment from coworkers, absenteeism from meetings, even not even showing up to work on occasion, harshness in dealing with colleagues, reduce consumption of chemicals. I've encountered people who they were so stressed on the job and so into compassion fatigue, even moving toward burnout, that all they could do when they got home at night was take a glass of wine, a bottle of wine even, and that was their evening until they went to bed. And they do that night after night. Just a way of trying to deal and process with what was happening to them because of their work. Go to the next slide. Hopefully I'm not too... I think I moved too fast here. Additional factors, if you would go to slide 26. And we're all into this, I think. Long hours, time constraints, getting the case notes in, deadlines, excessive caseloads, clientele, limited or inadequate resources, being on call for crises and emergencies, low pay, and then lack of recognition and support. I think that's a key one, is that sometimes we're in an office setting and nobody recognizes the success that we've had with a client. In fact, I've even talked to some of my child welfare colleagues, hey, if you get to have a success, the child goes back home with the family, a child's adopted, something good happens to your client, and you've been a part of that, have a celebration. Have balloons and whatever. Celebrate that. Because that's important, to recognize your success. Next slide, which would be slide 27. It's my little graphic there. You all probably seen this, but I think this guy's kind of cynical, and he's not being very helpful, that's for sure. Anybody feel like that?
Layla, did you want me to open the lines for folks to comment? Layla, you there? I think we have a technical difficulty. Layla, are you still on the line? Let's just give him a minute to call back in. I'm sure he'll be joining us. Lanny, are you back with us? Well, while we're waiting for Lanny to call back in, let me open it up to any questions or thoughts that folks would want to share. Do you have any questions about any of the material that Lanny's presented thus far?
I'm just your printout problem child here. On slide number 19, it's not possible to read those little bubbles at the bottom following compassion fatigue. I think that one says exhaustion. Just the others got unreadable, at least on my printout.
Right. Okay. Again, Luann, if you shoot me an email, I'll get you
okay.
A fresh copy of the updated version, and hopefully that will be responsive.
Wonderful. I'll do that. Thanks, Rick.
Any comments or things folks would like to add to what Lanny said thus far? How how significant an issue is burnout for some of you or for some of your colleagues in practice? Is it a real red letter headline kind of issue that that folks are wrestling with?
One thing I found is when what that can help is doing work for no money. In other words, doing service work besides your job can give you greater.
Hello.
Do you find that especially within your faith community or church that a lot
yeah.
of times that form where there's an expectation of unremunerated work and it just grows and becomes a life of its own?
Yes, the church gives me opportunities to serve without money, and it strengthens my compassion.
Lanny, are you back with us? Well, we will give Lanny a couple more minutes before we press on. You can just be patient for a minute. I will see if I can get on to another line and give Lanny a call in a couple of moments, see if I can help him work whatever he's struggling with. Just give us a couple minutes here. I was not successful in getting through to Lanny. I hope that you don't mind. I'm going to press on working through this PowerPoint. I'm not Lanny Endicott, but I'll do the best I can. But we certainly want to, in good faith, follow through to be able to provide you with you for today's session. So I'm going to mute your end and begin working through Lanny's PowerPoint. Best case scenario, he'll join us when he can. If not, we'll work through his material so that, again, we can still provide the CEUs that we promised prior to the session. Okay, now we're going to move on to talking about some of the culprits, some of the contributors to the difficulties that we have with burnout and with related issues, starting first with organizational structure. oftentimes difficulties with burnout can be connected with a disconnect between who we are as workers and the type of work or the organization with which we've become connected. So burnout is often a problem when the social environment in the workplace is a mismatch between who we are doing the job and the nature of the job itself or the organizational culture in which the job is done. And the greater the mismatch, the greater the potential for burnout. And oftentimes we need to ensure that when we are looking for work or thinking about making a connection with an organization or with a type of position, that we think long and hard about whether there's a good match between our strengths, what we're interested in, and what the position entails. It's important that the organizations and agencies that we work for set the agenda for self-care, developing policies, having practices in place, having folks within the organization who play a role in assessing early signs of burnout and struggle. And many of us are administrators in social service organizations, and besides our responsibility that we have to our organization's mission and to the clients that we serve, we also have an important responsibility to be on the front lines assessing when our workers are struggling and to be able to provide them with the kind of resources that they might need. And that we as social workers look to work in organizations and congregations where we know that there's a sensitivity to and interest in maintaining the health level of us as workers. So why do some organizations not do a good job about working for the health of the social workers in the organizations? Certainly there's the concern that has been only accentuated since 2008 with the financial pressures and difficulty. There always seems to be more to do and less resources, but particularly in recent years, that's been a real struggle. Along with that often comes the idea that our missions will continue to drive us to do more, even though we have less. And at some point in time, keeping some connection between the ability to do what we've set out to do and having the resources to do it has to match to some degree. Many times within the field of social work, we'll blame the social worker who's exhibiting some signs of burnout. We'll talk about social workers not being as organized as they need to be or not being able to separate themselves from their work and blaming folks who are working on all cylinders, using all the capacity they have, and still blaming them for struggling with burnout. And then a lot of times there's just not a lot of proactive preventative things that organizations can do, ensuring that within policy, within the philosophy, within the vision, values of the organization, and ongoing planning that an organization is sensitive to and supportive of folks who do social work to ensure, again, to minimize the possibilities of burnout. Burnout is not a one morning, one wakes up and recognizes that they're no longer efficient or effective. Typically, it's a gradual process that happens over time. Often, like the analogy of the frog in the burning pot, if you throw a frog into a burning pot of water, they recognize and jump out. But oftentimes, when you put them in the pot and slowly increase the heat of the water, what happens is there's a gradual increasing of the heat, and the frog isn't aware until it's too late that he or she needs to jump out of the pot. And often we have the same struggle. We're not aware. We're not in touch as much with ourselves as we need to be to recognize some of the early signs of burnout occurring. Oftentimes we feel that we need to add increased effort, but the more effort that we invest, the less we seem to accomplish, one of those warning signs that we need to take heed of. Oftentimes exhaustion, disillusionment, and isolation don't just become moods or things that pass by, but they become more and more a majority of the way that we relate to our work or how we feel as we're doing our work. And as the percentage increases of the amount of time that we're feeling that struggle, again, it's a sign of burnout having begun to have its effect on us. Burnout affects not just individuals, but also organizations and programs. You've probably experienced some of the effects in organizations in which you worked, things like low morale, absenteeism, and high turnover rates are some of the costs that burnout causes for organizations. And, of course, not only are workers affected, but when workers are struggling with these symptoms, clients and the level of services that they're being afforded also are being minimized. So let me pause for a minute and hear any questions or thoughts or reactions that you have about the last few slides and talking about burnout, not just as an individual, but also as an organizational issue. Any thoughts that you'd like to share?
Oh, there's a lot of noise.
I think that's someone who's typing on their keyboard.
Oh.
Hi, this is Gary from Michigan.
I agree with the last slide.
In terms of some of the effects on organizations and then the spillover on clients?
I have seen the organizational effects firsthand in working in public health.
It's not a pretty sight.
No, it's not.
And very, very difficult to reverse once it's gotten its hold on an organization. And oftentimes, with very little resources, not strong leadership, it can take even longer than that. Gary, it sounded like you had a comment.
Yeah, just a comment. I was thinking that as exhaustion and burnout is a gradual process, the example of daily hydration, of drinking enough water, oftentimes they say once you realize that you're thirsty, you're already down a certain amount, and that really to prevent that dehydration, you have to have a plan in place to keep hydrated regularly throughout the day. And so to prevent burnout is to really take those preventative measures ahead of time, put them in place, and make sure you're engaging those activities.
Gary, that's way better than my frog in the pot analogy. I'm going to switch to that one.
Well, thank you.
But the old ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure really is just by the way that burnout works. If we wait too long for the process, sometimes we've just gone too far. So the gradual, regular, ongoing way of feeding ourselves really, many times, is the very best way that we can be a benefit for clients. Other quick thoughts or comments to share before we move on? Okay, we will move on then. One of the emphases that Lainey brought out earlier on was the concept he called secondary traumatic stress. And this emphasizes the risk that any professional helper potentially faces when trying to be empathic with any of their clients who's been a part of a trauma whose reaction is so strong and so significant, again, that it has some impact on the professional. So a secondary trauma can be seen as a state of tension or even preoccupation with what the trauma of our client and what they're experiencing. And that can manifest itself in a number of different ways. One is we experience the traumatic events that we've heard through reportage. They can be an avoidance or numbing of any kind of reminders related to the traumatic event. It can suggest a state of sort of hyper arousal, and this can be combined with the added effects of cumulative stress, which can take a certain level of burnout and make it that much more significant or severe. There are some natural consequences that we also need to track and be aware of. So one natural consequence of being good listeners, of being the caring persons that we've been trained to be and helping those who are traumatized. And so, again, recognizing the impact that that can have on us and being aware that as we're providing support, that we also need to be providing the self-care to ensure that we have the strength to absorb what we're hearing and continue to be that healthy resource, but not to be affected in a way that makes us less effective and causes us to experience trauma as well. Lenny suggests there are three categories of symptoms that are associated with this type of trauma. There's intrusive thoughts or images or sensations, that is, images or sensations that interrupt our regular functioning, the things that we want to do, and intrude in such a way that they're very difficult to block out and they take a certain amount of time and energy from us to avoid letting them have, again, too strong of an impact on us. There might be an avoidance of people, places, or things, or experiences, which might elicit memories of the traumatic experiences. And then there also can be negative arousal in terms of hypervigilance, always feeling that one is sort of on call, on duty, ready for the experience and at the traumatic experience. Sleep disturbances, irritability, or anxiety are all symptoms, again, that talk about the effect of trauma on us. Lanny talks about understanding some of the symptoms that affect multiple dimensions, and so to be aware of how in each of these different areas or dimensions that we need to be aware of some of the symptoms that would be important indicators that that we're struggling. Those four categories would be emotional indicators, physical indicators, personal indicators, or work indicators. Some of the ones that fall under emotional indicators, particularly strong expressions of anger or sadness, anxiety, depression. Many of us recognize that we don't just have emotional signs and symptoms that aren't connected in some way with physical signs and symptoms, headaches, stomach aches, sleep problems, lethargy. Oftentimes, again, a tip-off that although we're not as self-aware as we need to be of the struggle that we're experiencing, but that when we're having many of these physical indicators to have a special heads up that something's not where it needs to be. Personal indicators, things like isolating ourselves as a kind of trying to protect ourselves, mood swings that are uncharacteristic of how we typically are, irritability, unfortunately, mostly with those that we love, our spouses, our families, and then often a kind of cynicism. A person who used to be able to look at a glass and see it half full can only see it half empty, but very cynical about the ability of their work to make a difference, to make a contribution. And then also work indicators, signs that we're, again, trying to minimize the difficulties that we're going through, and it leaks through into our work. So avoiding certain clients that we find difficult, missing appointments, being chronically late, just finding it very difficult at the start of our days to be motivated to get through our work. Let me open back up to some questions or thoughts that folks would like to offer based on the last couple of slides. Do any of these really stand out as symptoms that for you would be very indicative of stress and trauma that you're going through? Are there things that you know about yourself that when you see these indicators, they really give you a clear message, hey, red alert?
And the physical indicators, I worked for 5 years for child protection, and the headaches and the stomach ache, that was pretty common.
Yeah, oh golly. Do some of you have people in your lives, spouses, children, who can see these symptoms in you before you see them yourselves? I I know that's definitely the case for me. Invariably, my wife will pick up when I'm experiencing some of it, and she'll pick it up long before I will. And often surrounding yourself with people who know you and know what makes you tick, but when you are healthy and not, can be a very effective strategy for being able to catch things early enough to be able to put into place some strategies to regain an optimal level of health. Anyone else have a similar experience in meeting other folks in community to help them be aware of when they're not need to be? Hey, quiet group. I think we'll get back into our slides. Vicarious trauma. Vicarious trauma is the very significant, the traumatic impact on those who feel the intensity of the traumatic event through another person without actually being a part of that event, but experiencing it through the reportage or the sharing of another person of that particular event. One of the important risks to be aware of when working with traumatized children and things to, sort of monitor and to be aware of as you go through is that one needs a good deal of recovery time in working with children to be able to have time to pull back and to reflect. Looking for unresolved personal trauma in one's own self that becomes reactivated or one becomes in touch with because of, again, working with folks working through trauma. Many of us as social workers, because of our commitment and dedication to children, find that the population that we are most vulnerable to be affected by. Many of us thinking about children and their long life ahead, or many of the difficulties their experiences are through no own choices of their own, and so their trauma affects us in a particularly poignant way. We have to be careful and look at isolation and fragmentation at the workplace when we're lacking an effective team to work with and work with together. That would be a key sign to be aware of. And then always lack of resources. Whenever a social worker feels like they're responsible for pulling together every piece of the treatment plan, the almost sole success of working with the individual rests on their shoulders. That lack of resources particularly puts one at risk for struggle or burnout. Lanny put together some passages from Scripture that refer to ways that we can use Scripture to bolster ourselves, to remember the encouragement that we have through our faith, and that we can often draw on, particularly both preventatively, but also in those times when we're struggling most. And there are a couple of examples that he has lined out under that spiritual compassion slide. Verse from Exodus about having pity, having love and mercy from the Psalms, being torn of heart in James and Colossians, and having deep feelings in Matthew. Verses that resonate with the concept of fatigue, the idea of losing heart, and some passages that talk about losing heart or becoming faint and weary, recognizing that scriptures were written by people who were also susceptible to the struggles that we had as social workers, and many times scriptures were a mouthpiece for them to share some of those struggles and some of those feelings, and oftentimes the role that faith could play in helping them feel strong and be bolstered. Lenny Sly talks about stress, which he defines as a condition or a feeling that's experienced when a person perceives that the demands of what's expected of them exceed the resources that they have at their disposal, and so that a social worker feels that there's many things that they can do when their resources are strong and able, But when the demands significantly exceed the resources that we have to draw on, that would be a signal of important stress. The next slide talks about the balance of demands and stress. Oftentimes we have to weigh that besides the stress that's occurring at work, there are stresses in many other portions of our lives, and we can't just segment them out as if they don't have some impact on the balance of overall demands and resources in our work life. And so to be aware and to recognize the demands at many different levels that they play and the roles that they play in keeping healthy at work. And then on the other side...
Yeah, can you hear me?
Randy, welcome back.
What happened?
I'm not sure. Let me...
Is anybody left?
You had cut out. We're delighted to have you back. We're up to slide 43. Would you like to take over from here and jump right back on in?
Yeah, let me find 43 on my...
Okay, it's the balance of demands and resources?
Yeah, okay.
And we're at about the 8-minute mark left, just to give you a sense of timing.
Yeah, what happened with everything?
At some point you cut out, we just couldn't get you back in. But
wow.
No one's more glad than me to have you back in, so welcome back. Take us on home, Lanny.
Yeah, everybody has a copy of everything there, and we have 8 minutes. Here's what I would suggest we do with what we have. I would suggest going to the end. Let's go down to, say, 40. I would say go down to 40, 45. Are you with me?
Okay. We're at 45.
Yeah, we're at 45. We're talking about some things you can do for yourself on a personal level. Then you go to 46, group work level, some things you can do, mixing your caseload and so forth. Then if you go down to 47, you have a little waterfall there in the background, I hope, and you've got a number of things you can do for yourself personally. I like the positive addiction. I run every day, and if I don't run, I feel like I'm going through withdrawal. But I get a real positive kick within myself when I run every day. And so, and the spiritual disciplines are very important as well. Scriptures, reading, the same thing true with Bible study, well, scripture reading, and prayer and so forth. Meditation, rest, and then doing what you enjoy. And then deep breathing and imagery, combining those two, I think is real important, as we talked about before. Exercise, living in the moment. I think living in the moment is so important, and I really try to do that in my own personal life. Now, if we go to the next slide, it should say self-care on the agency level. And this is an area of focus for me now, currently, and trying to... look at stress from a larger perspective. In the past, I've looked at it mostly from the individual, what the individual can do, what the agency can do, and the agency office. But the bigger system, what does the organization, the agency do to promote self-care within the organization? And I've had numerous discussions with leaders of DHS here in Oklahoma. What can we do to help the entire system promote self-care within the agency? And it's a tough deal. It's really a tough deal. But with the time that we have, I want to go to the next slide, and these are some of the instruments. And then I'll get back to this one point I just mentioned to you. I would recommend all the instruments and everything that you can get are with Beth Stamm. Very good information. You can use it. It's not clinical. It's more educational, but it will assess satisfaction, compassion satisfaction, burnout, and compassion fatigue. And then the Headington Institute is a great resource. Same thing. All this is free stuff that you can use. for educational purposes for yourself and within your agencies. And you can see in the next slide, are you still with me? The Heading In Institute.
Yep,
with,
we're with the
assessing stress in your staff and so forth. Very good information. Authentic Happiness website with University of Pennsylvania. You can do an online assessment of yourself. Then you get into David Baldwin, the next slide. David Baldwin, Trauma Information Pages, Figley Institute, the Compassion Fatigue Awareness Project. All these have great information. University of Texas, I found, has a great website in their mental health services for students, and they even have auditory tapes and so forth that you can use to help yourself. I also recommend on the next slide that look at PTSD in the military. And some of the modules on PTSD 101, one of the modules includes the one on self-care. And you've got a gift from within some of those others. You can see, I'm going pretty fast here. Here's the one I really like. The next one's called the Sanctuary Model. And there is an agency here in Tulsa, Counseling and Recovery Services, which is a pretty good-sized mental health agency, a nonprofit organization. A year ago did an assessment of the staff satisfaction within the agency, and it came out terrible results. And so they implemented what's called the Sanctuary Model within the organization, addressing stress, compassion fatigue, burnout, all throughout the organization, finding ways to help people support one another, taking care of themselves, agency policies that really work toward helping people be healthy on their job. It's a very interesting concept called the Sanctuary Model, and you've got a website or a web link there that you can find that. Good information, but it involves a lot of change within the agency to make this thing work. And then the next one, I have some helpful apps. If you have an iPhone, an iPad, or even an Android, there is PTSD Coach put out by the VA. And then when it comes to breathing, B2R, Breathe to Relax, is also an app. These are all free that you can help yourself, you can follow this yourself, and you can help your clients follow these breathing techniques. And then there's one called a tactical breather. Try that. Try the tactical breather. It's also a very interesting breathing program. And then you have the next one, and this is the 30-question program by Beth Stamm. I'll just put this program in there, this questionnaire in there, and it's very good to assess the individuals within your agency. And you have the first 11 on the first slide. The next slide has the remaining 19. And this is all free from her website, Idaho State University. And then you've got the next one, the next slide, has Managing Staff Stress by the Heading Institute. And this is just one among many things that they produce. You can say being a good role model, seek to understand the local culture, grieving process, so forth, reduce environmental stressors, basic management check. A lot of different things that they indicate or advocate here that you can use to help you and your staff, okay? And here's one. Well, the next page or the next slide will also have that. Okay, so you've got my name and everything here in my website. This presentation's also on my website. And if you have any questions or any comments or certainly anything that you can work with, use it. I'm sorry for what's happened with the we had a little loss of space in there, but this information is for you. It's free. Contact me. One thing I'd like to do, I'm working with Baylor University and some other folks around trying to find ways we can link together to share our experiences and to share our information. Anyway, open it up. How much time we have?
It's probably time for two, three, four questions, Lanny.
Okay.
The lines are open.
Lanny, when do you do the deep breathing piece? Do you do that as preventative as well as dealing with yourself and others when they're in the middle of stressful situations? You know, talk to me a little bit about how you use breathing as part of this process for yourself.
For myself, I'll sit in the morning before I go run and do some deep breathing, and I'll actually do some prayer while I'm doing the deep breathing. And then certainly, anytime you have any kind of you feel rushed or you feel hurried, do some deep breathing. Just relax yourself. I think it's important to relax yourself. You're going to speak at a conference or a meeting or a workshop. Do some deep breathing to help you with that. Any kind of stress that you're about to approach, deep breathe. I think it also helps deep breathing when you're in stress, because it actually what puts more oxygen in your brain and it calms you down. Does that help?
Larry,
thank you.
Larry, have you found some resistance to the idea of deep breathing among churches or Christians, that it's too mystical, too New Age?
I have not. I have not. I tried to frame it kind of like we did in those earlier slides. Breathing is the breath of life, and breathing, and I just try to educate people that you need to learn how to breathe from the belly and get more oxygen in your brain and try it. Experiment with it to see if it works. If it doesn't work for you, don't do it. But I try it that way. But I haven't had any opposition to deep breathing. Nobody's ever really criticized that. I just simply say it's one of the old techniques of helping people take care of themselves.
Thank you for joining us today for NACSW's Podcast of the Month featured selection. We hope you found today's session useful and that it will support your efforts to thoughtfully integrate Christian faith and social work practice. We also hope that you will consider participating in additional NACSW's activities and events, including NACSW's upcoming convention in the fall, our quarterly audio conference workshops that we offer at no cost to NACSW members, and which includes free CEUs accredited by the Association of Social Work Boards, our online continuing education program, and access to dozens of archived podcasts from the members section of our website. Also, we invite you to join NACSW's Facebook group or our Facebook fan page. For additional information about these and other NACSW benefits and services, you can go to our website at www.nacsw.org. Thanks again for listening in today to our podcast session today.